Well, thank you very much for inviting me here. I first of all have to admit, in 30 years of practice, this is the first time I've visited the Food Research Institute. And thank you so much for making me feel so welcome. And also, thank you very so much for inviting me to be part of what's been a fantastic day. And also, big thanks to the earlier speakers who've really teed up what I want to say absolutely perfectly, which very much makes my life very easy now in terms of this presentation, which is looking at the practical aspects of advising athletes on what to eat. I've worked for a number of years as a registered dietitian and sport and exercise nutritionist, and had the good fortune to work with elite athletes from a range of different sports over that time, and got quite an insight really into their lifestyles, their training programs, and have spent a lot of time thinking about what the practical solutions are for them in terms of the meals, the snacks, how to put together the diets. And one day a coach said to me, "Have you got all this written down somewhere, Karen?" And I said, "No, why?" And he said, "Well, you're working with the athletes that have got funding from the lottery and UK Sport, but I have 20 other promising athletes that would really like this information too. So could you create a website with it?" Hence the concept of Performance Food, which is a website with a lot of this information that I've put together as resources. So what we do is we charge a fairly reasonable membership fee for people to come on and be able to download and access all of that material. So if that's something you're interested in, please do visit us. I'd also like to thank Thomas for also sharing his life with you as an athlete, and congratulate him as well. Big respect to you, and wish you all the best for the games coming up. And I actually think you were very generous in sharing a lot of your secrets with your training and your diet plan. But what I would have to say is I have every respect for Sharon as a sports dietitian, so I think it would be well taken care of. And you may see a few common themes in some of the ideas and suggestions, but I'm not sure if you're going to get everyone to sign a confidentiality agreement before they leave today, so that none of this leaks out to any of the opposition that might be arriving in a few months' time. So having an insight, and I think Thomas very powerfully gave us that insight of the commitment and the work and the focus that these athletes actually have. And you're dealing with a lot of things. It's a very busy schedule with the training. It's a very busy life. You're a student, aren't you, full-time at Southbank? You've got your studies, you've got your sports, you've got your training. Hopefully you can have some social life too, so you've got the balance in your life with your sport. You need to rest and recover, you do need some sleep. There is only 24 hours in the day, and we have to fit food in, and we have to have a plan for that. Actually, the name Usain Bolt has cropped up a couple of times today in people's discussion. And there was a link here with Martin Rooney, who you can see there in the picture, who I've done quite a bit of work with over the years. I'm not sure if any of you remember a TV interview that Usain did when he broke the world record. And he was asked by one of the journalists, "What did you actually eat before you competed, before you raced that day?" And I think he said the first thing possibly that came into his head, I don't know, he said chicken nuggets. So everywhere that I've gone to give talks to young athletes, they've all heard this. It's on YouTube, it's everywhere. Everyone has heard that Usain Bolt broke his world record having eaten chicken nuggets before he raced. And I've had the most terrible time trying to undo this. It's you know, the powerful influence of you know, the role model. So you're a very powerful person here, Thomas. So I'm glad you're a nutrition student, because when you go out and talk to younger athletes in your sport, you'll be giving them sound advice and sound information. So I was doing a workshop, this particular workshop, with Martin, in Surrey. It was a Surrey Schools Athletics workshop, and it was actually at the school that Martin went to when he was a young athlete. And I said to him, I said, how well do you know Usain Bolt? And he said, yeah, fairly well. I raced with him and compete against him. So I said, do you actually see what he eats for lunch? And he said, yes. Yeah, I sit and have lunch with him in the athlete's dining room. And I said, I'm having real trouble over this chicken nuggets thing. So is there any way in your presentation you could just explain to everybody that what he does actually eat? And Martin was able to say, yes, he does eat good quality meat, he eats vegetables, he eats rice, he eats pasta. And that was the only way really that I could actually undo this information. So we've heard a lot today now from all the different speakers about why sports nutrition is important to support training schedules. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's all about performance. And this is the big event of the century for us here in London, or second time it's come here. But we also want to make sure our athletes maintain good long-term health and have as long a successful sporting career as they possibly can manage. And we're very fortunate now that over the years we have a very good evidence base that's been accumulating that we can base our advice on as practitioners. And the IOC consensus statement on sports nutrition, published in 2010, is giving us even more detailed practical advice to work with. Now, as a practitioner, I have what I call my tick boxes. I have a number of things when I start to work with a young athlete that I like to make sure that I've addressed with them. So these are 10 of them, and that's quite a big list. It's not all going to be done on the first occasion when I meet with them. This will be developed over time. Usually when I first meet with them, they want to get to this one first and want to know what the quick fix is. And as we've been hearing, that perhaps the evidence for the efficacy of a lot of these ergogenic aids and supplements is fairly sparse, and there are possibly two or three where the efficacy is fairly sound. So we have to address all of these different areas. And we've heard about the importance of maintaining good glycogen stores for training and recovery to delay fatigue. And one of the first things I like to know about is the training program of an athlete. Before I even get into what they actually eat, I need to learn about their sport, when they train, how much training they do, their competition program, competition cycle. In this example, basically the athlete is doing 1 2-hour training session, these green boxes here, in any 24-hour period. So when we look at this, we have to think about the timing of the food around that training period. So within the 30 to 60 minute window, what we're going to feed the athlete at the end of that session, what they might eat or drink before it, what they might drink during the session, and then how we're going to get the other nutrients in during the rest of the day. Now, I don't know how many training sessions a day you do, Thomas. Is it just the one, or do you do more than one?
One, possibly two.
Possibly two.
Depends on
that. And you've got a busy day with your lectures and all the other things that you have to do. So the practical ideas that we have to fit in, we've got to think about the availability of the food, the access to the food, whether convenience products are going to be helpful. Now, when we get into people doing a second training session, or if we're working with people like triathletes who have three different disciplines that they have to fit in training for, they may be doing a swim early in the morning, they then have to recover from that, they go out and do something on the bike in the afternoon, and then they might be doing a technical running session in the evening, or some core work or strength and conditioning. It really then becomes very, very challenging and very interesting as to how we advise and what we choose. So there are standard guidelines, and again, as we've been hearing, these have to be individualised for the athlete, what their actual goals are, size of the athlete, the sport. It's not a case of one size fits all. It's actually tailoring these. So I talk about individualising the carbohydrate goals, and the first thing I look at is quantity and timing. How much do they need, and at what time of day? So once I've mapped out the training sessions, I then want to build the diet around those. So I think about what they're going to have in the morning, what they're going to have afterwards, what snacks they need to take, etc. So the first thing we think about looking at is what I call fast meals, eating to compete. So every meal, every food choice, hopefully will count towards that improvement in performance, will count towards that winning that medal. And this is really the mindset that we're getting into with athletes. Every meal, every snack, every drink, every choice will count towards benefiting their performance. So, jacket potato is quite a nice, easy source of carbohydrate, maybe with a healthy low-fat topping like cottage cheese or a stir-fry with noodles. Now, with the development of convenience ready-to-use, like straight-to-wok noodles, these things are very quick. Different types of sauces, the sauces often add a lot of extra carbohydrate too to the meal, such as sweet and sour type sauce. So that can be quite handy. And then I do some cooking sessions quite often with them to get them thinking about some other fast meals and snacks they can do. And one of the really favourite ones that we all do with the academy athletes, they all get together as a group and do this, is Italian bread pizzas. Now, one of the staples, and I try and look at shopping and being economical and efficient with ingredients, is always having a few standard staples in the store cupboard. So jars of Italian tomato sauce are absolutely fantastic as a standby. So what I suggest is they can use, say, 2/3 or 3/4 of the jar for a pasta meal one evening. If they save a little bit at the bottom of the jar, seal it, make sure they put it in the fridge, keep it hygienic. And then the following day, they can make themselves a very quick snack with the Italian bread pizza. Slice the bread lengthwise, spread it with Italian sauce. Now, depending on the athlete's requirements, if they need to make weight for an event, such as a taekwondo athlete or a boxer, or if they're looking to maintain a low body fat, we may just go light on the cheese, a light sprinkling of low-fat mozzarella, or if they're a rower that needs maybe 4,000 to 6,000 calories a day, we might load it up with ordinary cheese and stack it up with a load of other, double up the protein, maybe put some tuna on top as well. So we can modify the composition of that quite easily. If they do it as a group, they can share the pizzas they've made. They only take about 10 or 12 minutes in the oven to do quickly. And then what I say to them is make some extra. You can wrap them up in foil and take them as a snack for you the next day. Easy peasy, you've got lunch the next day. Try not to wake up in the night hungry and have a midnight feast. These are some of the ideas for recovery snacks for replenishing carbohydrate. I've chosen these because they're all low in fat. So things like the mini pancakes, the lower fat choices, the cereal bars, malt loaf. The ready sliced malt loaf is brilliant, without thick butter. Bananas, dried fruit, and low-fat biscuits. Fig rolls have cropped up in the diet plans earlier. And then another issue is glycemic index, which we've heard about too. And this is another choice and decision with the types of foods. So we may look at a low GI breakfast, as has already been discussed, such as porridge, or a low GI starchy food with the meal, basmati rice. Bean salads are another good option. And these can be divided up. Sometimes I suggest to athletes they take a salad box and they have what we call first and second lunch. They eat part of it early. They'll often do a training session, come back and eat the second half. So they divide their meals into smaller portions as well throughout the day. So that's another consideration. If we're looking for quick recovery after training, a higher GI carb, so here come the jacket potatoes again. Or if we're looking to replenish energy in very portable snacks, or look at glycogen loading, then concentrated, what I call compact forms of carbohydrate, that are concentrated in drinks, jelly sweets, low-fat biscuits like the Jaffa cakes. So we select the carbohydrate. And of course, there's been a whole range of energy supplements, bars and gels, providing these compact sources. And this is all well supported by research. Actually, one gap in the market that I have sort of thought about quite a lot, I'll just mention here, as people from industry are here, is that there is a little bit of a taste fatigue eventually with all of the sweet products and bars and gels. And I just think it would be quite nice if somehow a savoury type energy product was developed, particularly for the ultra endurance guys that are maybe doing events over 2-3 days, like the Marathon de Sable, which is providing additional electrolytes, particularly if they're competing in hot environments. Now, another consideration is the choice of drink. And we've just had a very excellent presentation from Helen about the development of sports and energy drinks and the different categories of drinks and the formulation of those. So another decision is which drink at what time. Drinks can provide a useful source of carbohydrate. And it depends whether you need electrolytes. You might say that an ordinary squash is fine with a meal, just to top up carbohydrate, or fruit juice. But then the sports drink will be the preferable choice once the athlete is training and exercise and sweating. So it may not be necessary for them to drink sports drinks all day long, all the time. They may wish to choose other drinks. One of the big jobs I have now, because there is such a wide choice of fluids available and different types of drinks, is educating athletes about the differences between all of these different drinks and the formulations and what they offer. So that ends up being a workshop and a session in itself. And I design little quizzes and competitions for them to deal with that. Another question is not just what type of drink, but how much do I need to drink? And again, this is very individualised. All of the recommendations are saying that really we shouldn't be following standard prescriptive guidelines. This needs to be individualised to the athlete. So what we need to do is assess their fluid requirements under different conditions, in different training environments, and help them work out the amount they need for their own individual sweat rate. So my answer to that question is, when they ask how much do I need to drink, I'll say I really don't know. That's for us to work out over the next few weeks, and for you to keep a fluid log and a fluid diary. So how do we know whether they're drinking enough? I think this is actually from a resource produced by GSK on hydration that I've taken this, but these urine colour charts, or P charts as we call them, are a very useful way of checking colour, and it's a very good way to break the ice if you've got a new group. Great, children really enjoy this activity. Get them to go and pee in a little pot, come back with their pots and compare their colour and decide where they are on the scale, whether they're hydrated. And initially they all think this is a horrendous thing to do, but actually, strangely enough, they seem to be very proud of their samples when they come back and quite eager to show them to everybody and discuss it. And monitoring weight. Any weight loss during the exercise period, if that's minimal, then that suggests that the athlete has consumed enough fluid during that exercise period. If they have lost weight, then obviously they need to replace that sweat that they've lost throughout exercise. Now, moving on to protein, again, the IOC consensus statement gives us helpful guidelines on this. We've had some discussion this morning about the amount of protein that's recommended, the guidelines in our diet, and most of us are able to quite easily consume meet the RNI for protein, which is around about 0.83 grams per kilogram of body mass. And even for an athlete who typically might require twice the recommended, the reference nutrient intake of 1.6 grams per kilogram body weight, if we look at the requirements for an 80 kilogram athlete, it's still fairly easily achieved just from ordinary foods, cereal and milk, beans on toast, a fairly substantial chicken portion with rice and veg, and then using the skimmed milk, perhaps with a milkshake flavouring, after training as a recovery drink. So we can achieve the actual total intake of protein, but one of the things I've spent a lot of time focusing on is the different protein sources that the athlete is using. And there can be a tendency for them to rely quite heavily on things like chicken, maybe tuna because it's convenient, and perhaps be using whey protein supplements and powders or milk quite a lot. Now, athletes do have an increased requirement and increased iron turnover, so this is a very important nutrient that I've learnt over my practice that we do need to pay careful attention to. And a lot of the athletes I've worked with have had iron stores, ferritin stores monitored on a regular basis, and we do struggle sometimes to maintain adequate ferritin levels. So often I find myself in a position of persuading people back to using red meat again, lean red meat, but also to balance that out over the week with chicken or turkey. Again, beta-alanine is cropped up. Well, turkey is a rich source of beta-alanine, so we want to have a natural source of that. Looking at recipes using turkey mince or turkey breast and stir fries. We've talked again about omega-3s earlier. Well, the oily fish is an excellent source of those, particularly mackerel. Although when I suggest tinned mackerel and tomato sauce on toast as a great snack when they get home, most of the younger athletes turn their nose up at that one. They're not so keen on it. I keep telling them it's yummy, it's lovely. If you've got any ideas of how to improve tinned mackerel and make it more appealing to the younger age group. I also teach them how to do a smoked mackerel pasta salad, which is very quick to make. They can have it as a warm salad in the evening and then take the rest of it cold as in a lunchbox the next day. And I'm also keen to include nuts to get the sources of vitamin E and selenium. So I'm ticking my boxes here for all of these different nutrients. So I'm looking to include iron-rich foods, very important to help support the physiological demands of training. And a lot of athletes go up to altitude, maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So there is an increased requirement for iron to support the adaptations to training at altitude by helping with the increased production of new red blood cells. So a couple more of my recipe ideas, a frittata or what I call a pizza omelette. Making lean burgers is quite another idea for a fast meal. We do this cooking in a George Foreman grill because it's a great thing, particularly for student athletes, to have in halls of residence in universities or in athlete accommodation. And they can do all of these together, and again, it's a good way to extract some of the fat, excess fat from the mince in cooking. Now, Mo Farah, one of our Team B very promising athletes for a medal this summer. This is from his blog. A couple of years back when he was training at altitude at Fontremont, which is in the French Alps. This is a favourite venue of Paula Radcliffe's. Also, another venue is in Kenya that UK Athletics use on a regular basis. And you can see here he's very much picked up on these ideas. He's got his pasta and vegetables, of course, for his carbs and to protect his vitamins and minerals, but he makes sure he has plenty of steak at altitude. He eats it on the rare side. I'm not sure if that makes any difference to the iron availability or absorption. But it means the steak is extremely rare, as he says, and rarer the better for him. So that's something that he's taken care of to support his iron intake. Now, again, I think a very important point was made in the development of recovery products and protein products this morning, that an awful lot of them on the market do contain quite large quantities of protein, maybe 40, 45 grams per serving. And the evidence base that we have is generally that 10 to 20 grams of protein, along with the carbohydrate, is really the optimal amount. So with protein intakes, to optimise recovery and protein synthesis and muscle fibre regeneration, it's not a case of having a supplement with as much protein as possible. It's more to do with the timing and quality of the protein. So here are some of the snack ideas I'll suggest. A flavoured milk drink with some low-fat biscuits, fig rolls or Jaffa cakes, yoghurt and dried fruit, milkshake and banana, sandwich or roll with a protein filling, cereal and milk. These will all fulfil that requirement. And the role of milk in a sports diet is very much emerging now. A lot of good research has come out over the last few years for the benefit of milk. Again, it ticks a lot of boxes. High quality source of both of whey protein as well as casein. Has important benefits in terms of rehydration too, by its fluid and all the essential electrolytes, including magnesium. Potential role for protein in the milk as well in helping with rehydration by helping to keep in balance the plasma osmolality. And certainly important for protein and carbohydrate. And one of, again, the suggestions for a do-it-yourself homemade recovery shake, which can be individualised. It can be made with fully skimmed milk for those trying to control calories, or again for those that have high energy requirements such as rowers, it might be made, or rugby players, it might be made with full fat milk. Can add a banana or add the milkshake flavour for extra carbs if they're required. And actually some of these milkshake flavourings I find very, very useful because a lot of them are fortified with vitamins and minerals. And vitamin D is another important vitamin that we're looking to protect, and with the iron content contribution there. So again, I see that as a very useful package of different nutrients, ticking several boxes all at once. If we're looking to increase the protein content, it's a little bit higher for a bigger athlete, then one of the old tricks that we always learnt when we trained as dietitians is that skim milk powder is a very easy way to double the protein in milk, and again you've got the benefit of the vitamin D there, so that's quite an economical way to do a homemade recovery shake. Talking of vitamin D, there's a lot of interest in vitamin D deficiency, which is resurfacing as a key concern. And with our elite athletes, particularly those with chronic low energy intakes, they may well have low circulating vitamin D levels as a result of insufficient intake from diet. But another change that we've seen over the last few years is with all the investment into our new sports and training facilities, a lot of athletes are training for longer periods indoors. Fantastic new training venues, but they are training and spending a lot more time indoors and perhaps not synthesising sufficient vitamin D. So this is a key issue, and it's something that they are being monitored for. So we're looking possibly, you know, routinely at vitamin D supplementation in this group. We want our athletes to stay robust and healthy, so we want them to have healthy immune systems. One of the problems with hard training, it does increase the production of stress hormones, which is certainly why recovery nutrition is such an important issue for them. So if the stress hormones remain high for long periods of time after training, if there is a delay in the athlete actually taking their recovery nutrition and replenishing carbohydrate, this can have an impact on the immune system. So the best evidence supports the use of a high carbohydrate diet to lower the stress hormone levels and promote recovery between training. But we're also interested in other things that we can do to enhance the immune system, and there's possibly a role for probiotic drinks and prebiotic products, certainly when athletes are travelling. And what I often do is get an athlete to start focusing on their nutritional preparation a good 2 to 3 weeks before they travel overseas and start to use probiotic products or include more foods to look at making the GI tract as robust as possible when they're travelling to different countries. And the possible role as well for other antioxidants, berries, particularly found in the purple fruits and vegetables, we're very interested in, and these seem to have a role in offsetting the oxidative stress of hard training. And a whole range of sports-specific products, such as the range of cherry products, have been developed with this in mind. Also interesting things like, talking of purple foods, the nitrates in beetroot. There's certainly a role in terms of health of the whole population in lowering blood pressure and dealing with hypertension. But some studies that have been done down at Exeter University by Professor Andy Jones have shown some very promising results showing that beetroot and beetroot juice can help power up training and delay fatigue by quite significant amounts. So the main problem we have is that they don't really like drinking 500 ml of beetroot juice every day, which was the amount used in the study. So if there's any other ways to incorporate this, and obviously I'm always looking at recipes for using beetroot. I have suggested beetroot sandwiches, but everybody seems to think these days that's completely weird. But I think beetroot sandwiches are great. So putting it all together, really, this is the issue. So just coming to the end here now, but if we look at breakfast, milk and cereal, some of the articles that have been in the press over the last 2 or 3 years, it's coming out as good as expensive sports drinks and boosting performance, claim certain groups of scientists. What I would say is, yep, cereal and milk is a great breakfast or snack any time of day, but let's see what else we can get into it. Let's add the berries, the blueberries, also some nuts, walnuts, Brazil nuts, to get the vitamin E and the selenium and the antioxidants in. And obviously the chocolate flavoured milk hit the headlines a couple of years ago as well. It's been very beneficial. So if I'm advising athletes on what to take with them to a competition, we'll probably come up with a competition eating and drinking strategy that will look something like this, that they will need to plan to have these types of things with them, where we're looking at the hydration, we're looking at something for them to eat at the end of the day, we're looking at the recovery products, and we're looking at things that will give them, that are compact and light and easy to eat between the heats and between the events, to keep topping up on energy levels. And this may be, at the end of the sessions, what a plan might look like. As I say, I identify where the training might be taking place, or where the racing or the events may be taking place, and we start to build the meals on a day-by-day basis, and look at varying the different protein sources, selecting the appropriate type of carbohydrate, looking at the recovery, making sure that we're ticking the boxes for getting all the different nutrients in, and something, we'll start to end up with a template that looks something like this, and I sort of help the athletes to develop their recipe collection and their repertoire. So I'd just like to conclude then by saying a big thank you to the IFST for inviting me to present today. I very much enjoyed being here with you, and also the conference organisers for looking after me so well and being such excellent hosts, and also for the generosity of the sponsors as well. Thank you very much.